T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
All right, minicamp's going on up in Seattle, and a lot going on as it's the return of Russell Wilson. So we're going to catch up with our friend from The Athletic, Michael Sean Dugar. You can find him on Twitter at Mike Dugar. How you doing this Friday?
Doing all right. I mean, it's raining, so that kind of stinks. But I guess, that kills my day at the beach plan.
Welcome to the Northwest. All right, let's get to it. Russell Wilson back. And yesterday he tried his best to kind of stamp out all of the negativity that's been surrounding him and his future with the franchise this offseason. Does it seem that it's just business as usual back for the Seahawks again?
I'm not sure entirely, but I do think that was a masterful job by Russell Wilson yesterday, like not really making sense, but leaving us to make sense of it. Like, it was really good. I mean, he basically created a villain that wasn't any players or coaches or anybody else, like attacked the villain and then just kind of left it at that while being really vague. Because, the thing that came out of that, aside from his desire to win, is that he's like, I didn't request a trade. I was like, well, no one said you requested a trade. Really? I went back and read the language in our story, me, Sando, and Jason Jenks, because we kind of kicked this thing off. Our language is that his agent knew Russell was so frustrated that he broached potential trade destinations to the team. That's true. Yeah. He didn't actually formally request a trade. And I made the point when I wrote a story yesterday that if he had requested one, we'd have led with that.
Right.
So like that sentence is buried like middle of the story. If he'd have requested something, we'd have led with that. And even Schefter's tweet, I went back and read Schefter's tweet from like February. It's the same language. It's like, hey, we're not requesting a trade, but if y'all want, to get me out of here, here's where I'm willing to go. Now you can argue the semantics of it, but like Russ took like a straw man, honestly, and like attacked their trade request. And so we could focus on that. And in a way, he kind of just controlled the narrative. It was really brilliant on Russ's part, because now he did it. He spent 30 minutes asking about it, and now no one can reasonably bring it up again unless there's like something newsy that happens, and I don't think there will be.
So you mentioned it. It really was a good portion of the press conference yesterday was addressing that. One of the things that I thought was interesting in the questioning, and I'd love for you to sort of break down his answers for us, is the talk about, when he came out and said, I don't like getting hit. We have to be better up front. Everyone was like, oh no, like the linemen are going to be offended by that, right? But you guys asked him about his relationship in the locker room and what he feels like he needs to do, if he needs to do anything at all, to sort of smooth things over with the locker room. Where would you say he stands inside Seattle's clubhouse right now?
So I think... I get why we asked. I forget who asked Russell that yesterday. Like, it's a very valid question. But Russell's not the person we should be asking. It's the lineman.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we need to – Dwayne Brown hasn't been at OTA, so we can't really ask him in that setting. But, yeah, if we get Gabe Jackson – because he didn't block for him. So if we get Brandon Schell, we get Ethan Posick, we get Damian Lewis, like, those are the guys that he offended in theory. And so we need to ask them how they felt. Like, I don't think – even if they all cussed him out in their little O-line Russell group chat – I don't think Russell would tell us on Zoom anyway,
right.
So I think it's up to us asking those guys, and they might lie to us too. Who knows? But I think Russell wasn't the one who was offended.
Right.
So it's not really like his place to, divulge whether people were offended and had something to say about it. So I would imagine like it's water under the bridge. Like, for the few people that I talked to on the team, about this. The general thing that they were focused on was, is Russell Wilson going to be our quarterback this year? If the answer is yes, don't really care about the rest of the stuff. It's above my pay grade. I just want to win the championship, and I know number three gives us the best shot. Like, is that a little simplistic view on it? Sure, but they're right. That's not, if you're a running back, that's not your job to worry about Russ's relationship with Pete as long as he's under center and wants to win you guys a championship. So I do agree with Russell when he said, like, yeah, no, everything's good. And Bobby echoed that sentiment as well. But, like, ultimately, Bobby and Russ aren't really the guys that I think we should be asking those questions.
We're talking with Michael Sean Dugar. You can find him at Mike Dugar on Twitter. He covers the Seahawks for The Athletic. Now, outside of Russell Wilson in this kind of chaotic offseason, there's also a new offensive coordinator. How are things going with Shane Waldron installing the new offense, which if it is anything like L.A., it'll be a vast difference from what the Seahawks have been running with Russell Wilson and company up there?
Like, installs are very simple in the NFL. They're very vanilla. Like, even in the preseason, you don't see much of the offense because no one wants to tip their hand. And I imagine that Shane Waldron would ideally like to install the offense while having Dwayne Brown and Tyler Lockett and Chris Carson, none of whom have been showing up to OTA. So, like, that's a setback of sorts. But it is nice to have Russ. What I thought was interesting the other day was DK called the offense intricate. And I think Pete Carroll used a similar word, and Russ called it super complex. It's like all the buzzwords that they're using to be really vague but act like they're telling us something. But asked to elaborate, DK said that there's a lot of route combinations and stuff that we haven't seen from any of the other teams he's coached on. And that I do believe, not that I'd be naturally skeptical of DK anyway, but I believe that because Shane's never really called plays. Mm-hmm. He's never been an OC, so the element of surprise is very much still intact. Versus like Arthur Smith leaving the Titans to go to the Falcons, you can watch Titans tape and get a feel for what the Falcons offense is going to look like. You can watch Rams tape all day. Shane wasn't the one calling the plays. He was the passing game coordinator, but the run game and the passing game were like so married in Los Angeles, it's hard to like really ID what Shane was doing. So even though I don't have a good feel for what the offense will look like, other than anticipating Russ being under center a little more, I do think that for the first few weeks of the season, they will legitimately catch teams off guard. And I think that's like a rare thing in the NFL where like everyone's stuff is already on film.
So speaking of getting caught off guard, question for you that I hope won't catch you off guard, but I would love to know who stood out to you in OTAs. This is your first time in person since, gosh, they lost to the Rams in, what was that, January. Who stood out to you of the returners, of the newbies? Who have you been impressed by that maybe you were caught off guard by their progress in the offseason?
It was just, I don't know if I was caught off guard by him necessarily, but it was nice to see Marquise Blair out there again, tore his ACL week two. Mm-hmm. And I've been kind of monitoring his like rehab process because like every guy is different how they bounce back from these things. Some guys like Tyler Lockett broke his leg and needed like a full year to get back to being Tyler. Meanwhile, Chris Carson broke his leg and was fine in like 3 months. It's like everybody's different. So seeing Marquise out there running around, no limitations. You know, he's going to be the starting nickel, I think. So, like, seeing him just not look like he had any issues was really just nice. I was, like, just happy for him. The same thing with offensive guard Phil Haynes, fourth-round pick, who has, like, legit played one game, and he's been on the team 2 years. Like, so seeing him just out there running around, no problems. I forget what his injury was, but that was really nice. And it's always nice to see Puna Ford as well. Like, Puna's, like, 300-plus, but, like, probably has some of the best feet on the team. Like, that's really impressive for a dude that big.
What are we seeing with Jamal Adams moving forward? I mean, is this there's holdups with the contract extension. Is he going to be showing up anytime soon to Seattle's workouts?
I wouldn't if I was him, to be honest. Like, I just as long as he's, like, training, you know, and not, like, I don't think he should be out there running sprints and stuff every day and like potentially hurting himself or whatever. But as long as he's in some like decent shape, you know, I think like he can work out in Texas or, you know, wherever he's at. I don't think that he'll hold out. If he does, that's like getting really bad advice from his representatives. Holdouts don't work in Seattle. They just don't, you know, like I think Michael Bennett tried a version of it. Marshawn tried like a version of it and didn't really get a new deal. Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas tried it and got zero new money. Like it just, you know, even Bobby Wagner like kind of had to do like a fake holdout where he showed up to work, but like only wore hoodies and didn't wear his jersey. And he's his own agent, so it's a little different. So he did get a deal. But for the most part, if you don't show up to work, they won't pay you. So I would imagine that Jamal's agent, forget his name, but he's a big-time guy. Jamal's a first-round pick. So I would imagine his agent advises him wisely, and like, hey, we can skip mini camp. That's just a few thousand. That's all right. But, like, training camp, be there, show up, don't hurt yourself. Let me handle the money side of it, because it really is not going to help them to hold out. I would imagine that he comes to the negotiating table saying, hey, pay me like a pass rusher because that's what I am, and they say no. And then he has to settle for like really elite defensive back money somewhere in like the $17 to $18 million a year range, which, I mean, not minimum wage. That's still really good money. It's just not Joey Bosa top of the edge rusher market money.
Which makes sense given sort of the injuries too that he has dealt with. But the other name that I wanted to ask you about, we haven't heard much, and I know I would love to know if you know where he is or what his status is KJ Wright.
Yeah, I think they've reached the point where, and Cliff Averill always made this point to me whenever I talked to him. He said they drafted a defensive lineman every year I was on the team. Like, he just knew his time was coming eventually. Now, he got hurt and had to medically retire, but it's the same effect. Like, KJ, they've drafted, like, three inside linebackers in a two-year span, BBK, Cody Barton, and then Jordan Brooks, including Shaquem Griffin. That was his initial role. And then now that they moved KJ to Sam, which is basically like an outside like rush linebacker, they just drafted Daryl Taylor at that spot too. So I really think it's just become a point where Seattle has decided, hey, KJ, thank you for 10 years. You were really great. But we have – in 2020 alone, they drafted two dudes who they expect to do what KJ does. Jordan Brooks to be the weak side linebacker and Daryl Taylor to be the new Sam. That's just it. Like, I don't think it's anything more complicated than that. Sometimes, you know, a breakup is just that simple. Hey, man, thank you for everything. We drafted these young guys. We'd like to play these young guys. You know, we'll keep in touch. I don't think there's any bad blood or anything. So I don't know if KJ will play again this year. I don't know if he'll retire or whatever. I know he's still here in Seattle working out. You know, he just bought a crib here with, like, heated toilets. So, like, he's not going in. Or heated floors, one of the two. He's on House Hunters. Go find the House Hunter episode with KJ. You'll see what I'm talking about. So he's still here. I just don't think he'll be a Seahawk anymore.
I mean, if you're buying heated toilets, you're in it for the long haul, man.
It's either heated toilets or heated floors. I mean,
either way.
Both.
Yeah, either way. That's commitment.
Yeah, you're not leaving.
No.
You're not leaving.
No.
All right, Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic. Appreciate your time, man. Always love the insight and the work. Keep up the great work at The Athletic.
Thank you guys for having me. Anytime.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.